Mindfulness mode.
You could search the tenfold universe and not find someone more deserving of loving kindness and compassion than yourself.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, welcome to the show once again. Today we're talking about spiritual intelligence. And I know that since you're a regular listener, you will be fascinated with this topic, fascinated with this conversation. The book that my guest wrote is called Spiritually Intelligent Leadership: How to Inspire by Being Inspired. And so you can tell right away why I'm so much looking forward to talking to this guest. He's a licensed clinical psychologist. He's been an executive coach for CEOs, entrepreneurs, and other leaders. And he's previously a founder and CEO of two public companies. So I'm here today with Yossi Amram. Yossi, are you in mindfulness mode today?
I think so. I try and be every day. And right now, looking at your smile, I'm more present and more mindful and more joyful. So, but hopefully it's a practice. I don't find that mindfulness is like, oh, you're mindful for the day and you're done. Okay, today I'm mindful. It's like coming back and back to presence, coming back to the moment and opening and receiving what's here. So,
yeah, I agree with you. And I was just going to say, what does mindfulness mean to you? And you've already kind of answered part of that. Do you have anything to add to it, Yossi?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's open, you might say non-judgmental awareness and receptivity of the reality that's within, without, and all around. So it's just being in that state of noticing, receptive, and allowing things to be as they are and opening to receive them. And then we can be skillful and discerning and how to respond to them.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, since your book is about spiritual intelligence, let's start by you defining spiritual intelligence.
Okay, well, that's a good place to start. So, well, I'll draw an analogy. Most people are familiar with emotional intelligence, and emotional intelligence is the ability, I would say, you know, there are many definitions, but fundamentally, it's the ability to draw on emotional resources and information to help manage, regulate our own and other people's emotions. So now I will just say that up until emotional intelligence became into vogue and entered the kind of the mainstream of our culture, there was a dichotomy between being emotional and reasonable. If you were a hiring manager and you did a reference call on someone, and someone told you, oh, so-and-so is emotional, you'd be worried. You're like, oh, I don't know. They're going to be emotional. What kind of drama am I going to get? But then emotional intelligence came in. And it was like, oh, someone's emotionally intelligent means there's an intelligent use of emotions. And being reasonable and emotional is not in conflict. Now, spiritual intelligence, okay, backtracking, is analogous to emotional intelligence. It's the ability to draw on spiritual resources and embody spiritual qualities in a way that helps us manage ourselves and life and be happier and more effective in our work and our relationships and all of those things. So you might say, well, what are these spiritual resources that you're talking about? And I would just say these are the virtues that have been hailed by all the wisdom and spiritual traditions throughout the world, regardless of their cosmology, theology, or anything like that. So whether you're a Buddhist and you believe in Buddha nature and reincarnation, or you're a Christian, you believe that Jesus was the Messiah, or you know, you're Taoist, or you're Native American, you're talking about Father Sky and Mother Earth, the basic qualities of purpose and service and trust and integrity and humility and egolessness and forgiveness are universal. Now, the good news is those virtues have been identified throughout all the spiritual traditions. And now modern psychology in the field of positive psychology has identified these as virtues that science has shown to contribute to our well-being, being a forgiving person, being an accepting person, being a trusting and hopeful person, being a humble person, being service-oriented, having purpose. So modern science is converging with this wisdom traditions that we have.
And I like the fact that you've explained it that way, because you pointed out right off the bat that, you know, being emotional did not always traditionally mean a good thing in the business world, and neither did being spiritual. There's that whole aspect of, oh, they must be kind of woo-woo. Do we really want them on our staff? There was that whole negative side of it in the business world. And so you're saying that now in the business world, it's okay if you have this spiritual side. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. The same as I said, bridging the gap between the emotional and the reasonable, bridging the gap between the spiritual and the practical. So just like emotional intelligence is not being just overly emotional, it's being able to draw on emotional resources and use that information to help you. Being spiritually intelligent is not just being spiritual. It's the ability to use those spiritual qualities and virtues and resources to help you. So being spiritually intelligent is different than being spiritual. And in fact, I will say this, you could be spiritually intelligent and be an atheist and don't consider yourself spiritual. So you could still embody compassion and forgiveness and humility and have a sense of purpose and don't consider yourself a spiritual person. So it's also an important distinction between spiritual and religious.
Have you always been a spiritually intelligent leader yourself, would you say?
No, God, no. I wish I was born, but no, like that. No, this is the joy of life and discovery. I've had some things that I would say I was spiritually intelligent, some dimensions of spiritually intelligent leadership. Like, I think I was a pretty good visionary in the companies I started. My first company, Individual, was the first company to do personal newspapers based on agents and profile and interactive media well before the internet and so on. So it was a visionary idea. I think that was a spiritually intelligent quality, but I also lacked trust and I had a lot of ego invested in it and I was micromanaging people and so on. So I won't belabor all the list of shortcomings I had, but I experienced a dark night of the soul and got depressed because I was overly identified with the business and burnt myself out. I didn't take good care of myself. I was working 70, 80 hours a week. But then out of that depression and dark night of the soul, I had an awakening experience. And that awakening experience I saw through the illusion of our separation and felt our interconnectedness.
How long ago was that you had the awakening experience?
This was in 96.
Oh, quite a long time ago.
Yeah. So, but it took a long time to change the direction of my life and go back to school and get a PhD in psychology and do all this research around what spiritual intelligence is and how to measure it. And then to show that leaders that in my research, a study with 42 CEOs and 210 members of the staff, showing that the leaders that scored higher on spiritual intelligence were better leaders. They led teams with higher morale, more commitment, and lower turnover. And this is after controlling for emotional intelligence. So it was important to show that spiritual intelligence is complementary and related. It's somewhat correlated, but different. And each of them contributes, but together they contribute more. So this was all my research. So I've been on a journey of 20 years to embody spiritual intelligence. I'm by in no means done.
Very interesting. So when you work with a CEO or someone who wants to improve their leadership abilities, what are some of the first steps you take with that individual?
Well, I think it's super important to figure out what is the high aspiration that they go hold for themselves, that they, who is the person they want to be. So we have to have a vision of who is the person that I want to be. So that's one thing, and setting an intention. So it's the strength of our intention that is the rudder that keeps us on course, and we're going to get off course and we get back on course. If you have a rudder, your boat, you got the stormy seas, the winds are changing, but you know, you're going to weave and dart. But if you have your intention, you get back on track. So that's one thing. What is the intention? What is the highest aspiration? The second thing is turning the person back to them, into themselves. I mean, our culture is so oriented that to be seeking external validation and the goodness out there. Now, to be a leader and not a follower, you have to have your own inner north star, your inner compass. Mm-hmm. And our power only comes from within. Our power is not elsewhere to be found. So training the person to turn back to themselves. And, you know, you can think about it in terms of the foundations of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the emotions, mindfulness of thoughts. But it's, you know, a fundamental part of it is building self-awareness. And because when we have that self-awareness, we can discover those inner resources, the trust and our discernment, our integrity, our inner compass. And that's so fundamental, because when we're not in touch with ourselves, then what are we're not leading. We're following something that we're not even aware what it is. We're following habit, conditioning. So it's those two things, is setting the intention, the highest aspiration, and secondly, learning to tune in and uncover our essence, our life force, you know, our spirit, you can call it. But it all comes from turning our attention inward and not being blindsided about what's happening. Of course, as leaders, we need to see what's happening with our audience, with our customers, with our investors, with whoever the constituencies and the multiple stakeholders. But we have to be clear about what is happening to me and what am I feeling? What's my truth? What's my vision? And that all comes from within.
So if I were a leader of a lot of people in my company, how can I inspire them? I know the subtitle of the book is How to Inspire by Being Inspired. So can you elaborate on that, how I can inspire my people fully?
Yeah, well, I think as the title says, and I was going to say before, you can't lead anybody until when you can lead yourself. So all leadership is first and foremost self-leadership, and you can't inspire anybody until when you're inspired yourself. So, you know, it goes back to getting inspired ourselves. And that means, you know, finding the vision of the world that we're passionate about and we want to devote ourselves to. So, you know, what is my purpose, and what is the world I want to see, whether it's a company or a nonprofit, or I'm running an engineering department or a marketing department. I have customers within the company, outside the company, whatever. But what is my vision of the level of service I want to offer those? What's the quality? What's the process? So we have to be clear on our vision and how it adds value to the world, to that audience. And we have to be fired up about why that vision is meaningful for us. If we're not fired up about and enthusiastic about that vision, then we don't have the life force and the passion. But when we do, then we are sending that energy, those vibes, and people that line up with that vision will want to join us. And then we have a shared vision and a shared intention where our power multiplies. And when you have a group of people with a shared intention, then there's a resonance in the field, and all of that energy, everybody's rowing in the same direction, as opposed to having politics and people pulling in different directions. So it's getting fired up about our vision and then building a community of people that are aligned behind it and having a shared sense of value. So how are we going to get there? I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, you are making sense. I'm just wondering, if you were approached by a large company, would you rather do a keynote address to all of the staff members, or would you rather set up some workshops and work with individual people or small groups of people within that company?
Yes. I think there's value to both. I think first of all, this notion of being spiritually intelligent leader, it doesn't apply only to the CEO or the top level. First of all, we're all leaders in our own lives. We're leaders. What does it mean to be a leader? We're influencing people in our community, in our family, in whatever it is. So we're all leaders. And regardless of where you are in the organizational hierarchy, you know, you could be a leader in your team, and you can have ideas, and you can initiate, and you could feel inspired, and that energy and that enthusiasm will ripple out and affect people. So I think it would be important for everybody to buy into the notion that I'm not passive. I can take responsibility. So the first one of the key parts of leadership is taking responsibility. And that can happen at any level of the organization. So you want to set a culture where everybody's encouraged to take responsibility. Everybody becomes a leader in their domain. I mean, not chaos, and you need to have roles and responsibilities defined. But so I think that's why it's valuable to do this for the entire organization. But then you have to go deeper with small groups and individual work. So, you know, people could hear my talk and maybe feel like, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe they'll be inspired for a moment. But then we go back to our old habits, and old habits die hard. So you got to work with people deeper. So that's where small groups and one-on-one work on an ongoing basis is crucial to affect that transformation.
And yeah, spiritual, well, your enthusiasm is absolutely infectious. And I just want to ask, when you get in there with a company and you start doing workshops, what do you do if you get that attitude from some of the attendees? It's like, oh, not more of this again. Oh, how do you ever run across this? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, people are cynical. We've all been burnt. We've all, you know, brought our, you know, we're born into this world with a spirit and a soul that's pure and innocent, and it's just vibrant of aliveness. So, but we get hurt, we get wounded, and then we get jaded. Like, okay, I don't want to really take this on with this passion. I'm only going to get disappointed and disillusioned again. So that's normal. And so the way is to be open, to welcome that kind of thing, because otherwise I'm closed off to them, and that doesn't build trust. So what builds trust is the openness, the willingness to hear those concerns, and to be vulnerable and normalize it. Yeah, it's normal that you're skeptical. I was skeptical too, you know? And,
yeah.
And so then you join them. It's an Aikido move, you know, in martial arts and Aikido. I don't know if you've studied or done that, is that you have to join the person's energy. They're coming at you. You punch me here. I take your arm and I direct it, and then I redirect it. Otherwise, against it, then it jolts both of us. So joining the person and then redirecting is kind of the Aikido move that you do in martial arts. But it's when someone comes to you with a concern, you want to hear them, you want to draw them out, you want to join them, validate their concern. Otherwise, you're not building the rapport and you're not building the trust, so they're not going to listen to you.
What's the most exciting presentation you ever made on this spiritually intelligent topic?
No, I get excited by all of them. I'm excited right now. I don't know why.
So just everywhere you go, you're just always excited about sharing this message. You know, I thought you've probably shared it hundreds of times to companies all over the globe. Am I right?
I've worked with over 100 CEOs. I've not always gone in front of the entire company and all of that. I mean, a lot of my work is one-on-one. But, you know, I try and approach each encounter in a fresh way. And the comparing mind that we have is not really helpful. I mean, right now I could be sitting here and say, well, how is this meeting here with, you know, with Bruce compares to my meeting with this other guy? It's going to take me out of being present.
Right. And
so, you know, right now I'm here with you. I'm appreciating your smile. I'm connecting, and the words are just flowing out of me. I'm not even, you know, thinking. I'm just a channel, and this stuff is moving through me. You know, it may seem like I'm passionate. I don't know what it is. It's just the life force is moving through me right now.
And so when you get up in the morning, what's your morning routine? What gets you going, or are you just always this way?
No. Get up. So, yeah, I mean, I work on, you know, my self-care. And so as my alarm went off today, I mean, first of all, I'm in bed for another 5 to 7 minutes, setting my intention and doing a little gratitude and reminding myself that I'm here on this planet Earth. And what is my highest aspiration, which is to awaken greater spiritual intelligence in myself and the world. So I'm already in gratitude. I'm already in clear about my intention. I'm reinforcing that. And those are critical moments in our day when our mind is still not, and our egoic identity hasn't gelled. We're actually most receptive. So the programming, when we put into our mind, first few moments of waking up and as we fall asleep, are crucial in reprogramming our unconscious. So I'm just giving you an example. Then I go through my whole routine and I take care of my body. I spent today 45 minutes on the beach, you know, a brisk walk of 30 minutes. It's the sun is rising, the birds are coming, there's a lot of beauty. I'm walking and then I'm doing some Tai Chi and Qigong to take care of my body. Then I did a 40-minute practice of meditation and prayer and more gratitude. And then later today, I'm going to do more physical exercise and some weights and strength training. So I spend every day about 2 hours on my self-care to keep myself vibrant and alive, and because this is my instrument. If I'm going to play good music, my instrument has to be in good shape. This is my vehicle. This is my car. I have to take care of my car if I'm going to drive it long distance, and it's going to be comfortable for people who are on this ride with me. So, you know, I have to take care for this self to take care of the greater self.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, in your book, Spiritually Intelligent Leadership, was there anything that you wanted to include, but you just couldn't include it because you had to scale things back to, you know, fit a certain parameter?
Well, you know, it is a constraint, you know, to the first I wrote it was 100,000 words, you know, and
okay.
And then my publisher and editor is like, oh, that's going to be too thick, too intimidating, and so on. So I had to trim it down and take down the less essential things. And we got it down to about 70,000 words, which is the kind of thing that people can manage. So had to trim a bunch of stuff. You know, my life story, I was in more detail. I had to make it more concise and so on. But I think the essence of it, of what I wanted to say, is there. I went through many, many iterations to try and articulate it. And I was going to say this, spiritual intelligence is not just cognitive. It's not that you get the idea. To develop these habits and these qualities, to embody purpose, to embody humility, to embody compassion, to embody beauty and joy and all those things, it's rewiring our habitual network. So it's an ongoing, and you have to do experiential exercise. It's not like you read the book And I mean, you get the idea, you get some of it, but it's like someone can give you the most wonderful talk about mindfulness, but you and I know that mindfulness is a practice. And, you know, it's like a muscle you're building. You have to go to the gym again and again and again if you don't want it to atrophy.
Yeah. Yossi, what are your thoughts on forgiveness?
Well, I think forgiveness is an important quality. And, you know, the classical thing is to distinguish between forgiveness and forgetting. So forgiveness is not forgetting. It's making peace with the past. Otherwise, you're at war with reality. And when we're at war with reality, then we're victims of reality, which disempowers us and depresses us and zaps our life force energy. So, you know, but to get to forgiveness, you know, it's an intention. You have to say, okay, I think Jesus even said it's like it takes 70 times seven, or I forget what it is. I wasn't brought up Christian, but I know that's something he talked about, that it's a process. And sometimes to get to forgiveness, you have to work through anger, and you don't want to deny the anger, like someone who's molested, abused, raped, whatever, natural reaction is going to be the anger to the perpetrator. And that's a healthy reaction of our organism, is that whose boundaries have been violated. So you can't shortcut it. You have to then work through your anger, but all along with the intention to forgive whatever happened, because otherwise, you know, we're carrying the wound forever and it won't heal. When we do the forgiveness and we go through the process, then the wound becomes sacred. You know, then whatever happened to us becomes an alchemical process of transformation that, you know, we become perhaps a wounded healer. You hear many, many stories of people that have been wounded and hurt, and then use that to you know, do some great things. I mean, this guy I met a number of years ago, his son was murdered by just random gang violence. Like, these gangs wanted to prove to each other their strength or something, so they just said, okay, you go and find someone, you kill him. You know, show us you could do that. So his son was just killed, murdered for nothing. That's a horrible thing for a parent to lose for random, no reason, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
So that, but what did he do? He started a nonprofit to transition and work with gang members to give them connection and purpose and rehabilitate them. So he took what was a horrific experience and found a way to make some meaning out of it. And through the process of doing that, I think he found forgiveness. Now, the wound and the pain of losing his son is never gone.
No, it's never going to disappear. Yeah, I want to ask you a question about bullying. I've interviewed people and they've said, well, you know, my boss or my project leader or my CEO is just such a bully. And, you know, I've worked in the field of bullying prevention a lot. And so I like to ask my guests, if you have a story about bullying where mindfulness would have made a difference.
Well, you know, there's both sides. There's sort of the victim of the bully, and then there's the bully. I mean, the bully, it's probably bullying because they don't know how to be skillful to get what they need, and they have a sense of shame or weakness underneath that they're trying to cover. So if they were more mindful to know what's really motivating them and address this inherent weakness that they feel or whatever that they're trying to cover up by being overly aggressive and whatever, that would prevent them from bullying. And that doesn't mean you're weak. You could be fierce as a boss or as a CEO or whatever, and you could be, you know, with strong resolve, but you could be respectful of the people you're dealing with, and you don't have to, you know, it's not about your ego. It's about, you know, the vision, what you, the standards you're trying to uphold. And in fact, you know, this researcher, Jim Collins, done a lot in the field of leadership. He's found that humility and strong resolve is what results in the best results for leaders. So the point is, you don't have to be a bully, but you can have a strong resolve, you can be fierce, and you can hold high standards as a leader. But so that's one side. The other side is on the victim side. It's being in tune, and then mindfulness. We all have good, healthy boundaries when we attune, and to notice where our boundaries are being violated. So, and then to develop habits on how to respond when we're feeling that bullying energy that violates our boundaries. And so I say, hey, I appreciate what you're saying, but could you say it another way? It's hard for me to hear you right now. Or something like that. I can't take what you're saying when you're talking in this tone. I'm going to take a break. I'll come back. Maybe we could talk in half an hour. I want to hear you. So if we're mindful of what's happening to us and our boundaries, and then we practice and develop skills, then we can respond to the bullying energy in a way that actually protects the other person. Because at the end of the day, the bully is not feeling good about themselves, and right, they're doing karmic harm to themselves. So when we can set up healthy boundaries, we're protecting them against doing harm to others, which in the long run harms their soul. And then we're protecting ourselves. So
that's
easier said than done.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, Yossi, when you were a child of 7 years old, was there anything about you that would have predicted that you would be involved in this area of spiritual intelligence?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I had a role model of a grandfather that was a spiritual person and was an observant Jew who was a refugee. My parents both were refugees from Iraq, who escaped and came to Israel and started, you know, in tents and what happened, escaping persecution. My grandfather, who his oldest son was put in jail for 7 years, while his wife, who was pregnant with twins and two young children, all the four of them left to Israel. So they went through a lot of trauma.
They sure
but
did.
What I did see is that my grandfather, whose name was Sason in Hebrew, which means joy, maintained a joyful attitude, and he had a deep trust in life. And he would always say, one of the things that always stuck with me was, it's like kol akuva letova in Hebrew, which means every mishap has a hidden blessing or something to be uncovered. So he had that basic trust in the fundamental goodness of reality, that despite all the trauma and difficulties, that he will be okay, and then there's something good that will emerge from it. And it was that basic trust, or you might call it faith, that I witnessed, that I was like, wow. Now, I was not religious. It didn't make any sense to me, and all the rituals and whatever. But what I experienced was someone that had that basic trust and faith, and that resourced them to have joy when their life circumstances was incredibly difficult. I think that impacted me in a deep way that I didn't realize till later. I was like, okay, there's a real resource here that someone could go through such things.
Well, it makes sense to me that you were impacted that way, because you do have such an aliveness, such a bright shining way about you. So yeah, that really makes sense. I'm glad you explained that to me.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Yossi, as we move forward in the interview, I want to ask you five quick answer questions. So just 30-second answers are perfect. The first one is this. Who is one person who has been a really powerful mindfulness influence in your life?
I would say Gandhi. Gandhi, you know, his devotion to truth and egolessness and leading based on high values that, and at some point willingness to risk his life, knowing that he might be targeted. So I think that would be the first person that comes to mind.
My second question is about emotions. How has mindfulness helped you to deal with your emotions differently?
Well, it just enabled me to be open to look at what is called shadow emotions, including shame or anxiety, and work through them and not run away, not be afraid to look at shame. I know one of the hardest emotions to feel, for example, is shame. And I've carried my own shame. But you know, it's by going descending mindfully with presence into the dark that I believe we discover and uncover our sacred spark. So it's like mindfulness is really the ability to go in and open and be curious to these negative emotions. That is the only way we can transform them. Otherwise, we're just repressing them and they're hiding there in the closet waiting to come out.
Yeah, very good point. Yossi, let's talk about breath. Do you have any thoughts or comments that you can share with us about the breath? And breathing?
Yeah, well, breathing obviously is essential for life. But when I talked earlier about, you know, one of the important things to connect with our life force, to me, we feel our life force in a physiological way through two ways. One is breath. The other one is the heartbeat. So I think if you look at many meditative practices, it's following the breath. Now, it's calming and centering and all of that, but I think there's an underlying principle. What is spirit? The word spirit in Latin comes from the root, the animating breath of life. So the breath is really the animating breath of life. And as we follow the breath, we're feeling our aliveness, which roots us in our life force. And so I think it's super important. There's a connection between breath and spirit, in the very word itself.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Your book, Spiritually Intelligent Leadership, is a book I highly recommend. Are there any other books you would recommend to our listeners?
Well, I think one of the books that right now is one of the bestsellers that I would recommend, it has to do with building habits, which I think Atomic Habits, I think is super important. You know, because these qualities I'm talking about require practice and you know, that requires building habits that reprogram us. I mean, one of my favorite authors is Stephen Covey, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, The Eighth Habit. And he, in his later years, started to talk about spiritual intelligence. And I think, you know, I think that's another book that's coming to mind right now. But, you know, I think there are many books in depending on the person's path and so on. I mean, I've always enjoyed Daniel Goleman's books on emotional intelligence. And so.
Yeah, I do too. I really enjoy Daniel Goleman. Okay, so my last question is about an app. Are there any apps of any description which you would recommend that can help with mindfulness or with spiritual intelligence?
You know, there's the Insight Timers and all these other things, but I do have clients that like, you know, Calm and Headspace and all, but I don't use those myself, so I can't talk from direct experience. But it's interesting to see all these apps that are out there. I mean, where technology in some way makes it such a challenge for us to stay mindful and presence, and it can be so addictive. And then And then it's at least, you know, we're using the same technology to deal with some of its pitfalls. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And this is not one of my quick answer questions, but I'm just interested in your thoughts on artificial intelligence, because I know that that's being used in a lot of different apps for mindfulness and being used in so many different ways. Are you embracing AI?
Well, I think some of my clients are CEOs of companies that are using AI and so on. I think AI is going to transform our world, like it or not. I think the question is, I think it just, to me, it means things like emotional intelligence and spiritual intelligence become that much more important, because the cognitive intelligence that we have, a lot of the cognitive tasks that human beings, smart human beings do, will over time will be automated. So the same way that, you know, people, a lot of human productivity was based on manual labor, and then there was the assembly lines that automated that and the robotics and so on. So like, okay, well, we can't really differentiate ourselves against robots based on our physical capacity. And then, you know, then you get AI that says, oh, okay, we could do a lot of the calculations and the writing and the editing and whatever that human beings. So what's going to differentiate us? What's going to keep us? I think it's going to be the softer skills of spiritual intelligence, emotional intelligence, that going to give meaning and purpose to our lives and have morality and judgment and things that, you know, the AI is only going to do what it's programmed to do. So,
yeah, I'm glad I asked you that question, because I really agree with you 100%. That's such a great answer. As we wrap up the interview, Yossi, I want to ask you if you have any final words of advice for our Mindful Tribe listeners today.
It's a journey. Enjoy the journey. I've been on this journey, as I said, for 20 or more years, just since I had my awakening experience that reoriented my life, and I'm still working on myself. Don't expect perfection. It's the other side of mindfulness is compassion and self-compassion. And as the Buddha said, you could search the tenfold universe and not find someone more deserving of loving kindness and compassion than yourself. So I think the hardest thing for us to do is to be compassionate to ourselves, be patient with ourselves, know that this is a lifelong journey, and enjoy it.
Great advice. Well, thank you so much for being on Mindfulness Mode, Yossi.
Thank you. It's a delight to be with you, and I enjoy your presence and your smile and your probing questions and the opportunity to talk to your listeners. It's wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you have a great rest of your day. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, thanks for joining us today. And I want to thank my sponsor, Athletic Greens. They have a product called AG1, and I can tell you that this is a terrific product. It contains 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source ingredients, and probiotics. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, this will work for you. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, no artificial ingredients. It supports better sleep and better alertness. Athletic Greens uses the best products based on the latest science, and it costs less than $3 a day. So here's a special offer for you, Mindful Tribe. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/mindfulness. And with that, take what we've learned today to reach new heights of calm, focus, and happiness. Stay in the mode.